You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
I am the Alpha, I am the Omega.
What?
I am the Alpha, I am the Omega. I am the Alpha, I am the Omega.
Hey!
I am the Alpha, I am the Omega.
Alpha, Omega, the fuck are you saying? Fuck are you saying?
So, Gene, I've got a question.
I'm scared to ask.
So, which of us is thumbtacks and which of us is screwjobs? We should fight crime. We could be the new fashion police.
I feel like I'm the screw job because they crap wrestling shows running swerves on me.
I think the bigger question is which of us is the Marty Jannetty?
Oh, that's sad. Anyone that watches WWE lately?
As you may have recognized, it is I, Richard.
And this is Gene.
And we are back for Thumbtacks and Screwjobs, the wrestling podcast is part of the One of Us network. We are so glad you decided to download us. We really super appreciate it. Don't forget, you can keep shows like this and everything else in the OneOfUs.net family on the air simply by becoming a subscriber. Level start at $2 a month. It's really cheap. It's really great. You get access to all kinds of exclusive content, including things like the weekly news program, the Breakfast Pub, news and interviews on everything under the sun relating to entertainment. Film commentaries, tracks, all kinds of stuff. It's just great.
It's like an internet geek shopping mall.
It really is. It's a smorgasbord. Smorgasbord. Is that a word? Should be.
I'll allow it.
I'll allow it. Ah. Anyway, it's been a busy couple of... It's been busy since we last met.
Yeah.
This is the weird thing we're in at the moment. Because am I going mad? Or about a year ago, did the WWE go... We're going to be cutting down on pay-per-views.
I remember
and special events.
I remember
It was supposed to drop down. This has not happened.
No. Last year, what was it? 19?
Yeah.
Pay-per-views?
It feels like we're heading that way fast now.
Oh, excuse me. Network specials.
How many have we had this year already?
Too many.
It really seems to be like one every other week, which is... It was bad enough when we had, 3 hours and change of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, and a 2.5 to 3 hour pay-per-view every month. I mean, it was like that was a lot to catch up on, which is one of the reasons that the brand split was supposed to be a good idea. What have we got now? I mean, we got Raw, which never ends and is interminable. You've got SmackDown, which should be better than it is. You've got a pay-per-view every 2 weeks, which runs, which I think is the ultimate sign that they have a real problem in how to fill their time. They run anything from a 3 hour show, which runs 2.5 hours, to a 4 hour show, which runs for 7. It's just absurd. And then 205, and then NXT.
Watching all of that, that's devoting 36 hours a month just to WWE. That's not even bringing up any other promotion.
Here's the really amazing thing that I think we've seen in the last couple of weeks. Watching both Money in the Bank and... goodness gracious, could you...
The most ill-thought-out title for a pay-per-view ever.
What, Lucille?
Vince is near the pulse of what's in. Kids sure gonna think that's catchy.
We'll get to Blueberry Hill in a minute. But this is the amazing thing of it. When I was watching both shows, I was sat there, I was just like, you know what? I feel like I've seen this all before. And I was thinking, I was like, I've seen this all before. And this was the amazing thing. Now, I know that, Jinder fans, buckle up. Look, the guy still sucks. He's not getting any better. I would feel like, you know, the people go, well, his intros are great. It's like, yeah, you could do a good intro for anyone. He is not good in the ring. That was a horrible, horrible match. He was putting together some of the ugliest moves I've seen. Hunt it down. If you have not seen, when he tries to apply a figure four on Randy Orton, it is literally Randy lying on his back for about a minute while Jinder tries to remember where his hands and feet go. It is the worst figure. And like, here's how bad it was. Dear Mike Mizanski, dear The Miz, remember how we said that your figure fours were terrible? I apologize. Your figure fours were sloppy. They weren't terrible. They were sloppy. They were kind of ugly. And in fact, occasionally, I'm sure you got the leg the wrong way around. But this was the worst figure four I have ever seen applied in my entire life. And I'm sat there and I'm thinking, like, you know what? The way they booked this, all that's going to happen is that we're going to have another match between these two. And not only with that, we're going to have a Punjabi prison match.
Why? Who? Their writing staff, if I'm not mistaken, they're all pretty much under 30. Some of them early 20s. Do they remember? I didn't think kids had that great of an attention span to remember that
it was
an awful match.
It was the worst match, I think. Wasn't there two?
Two.
Yeah, because the first was... It was supposed to be Show versus Carly, and then this is the thing, folks. This was a match that was designed around the Great Carly, and then they realized the Great Carly,
workers.
Yeah, that he wasn't physically capable of doing a match that involves completely surrounding the ring in an impenetrable and completely opaque.
All I remember are cameramen having difficulty getting good angles and good shots because there's essentially two cages.
Yeah.
And they're inside of some of them were inside of the first one, so you got halfway decent shots. Some of the angles were outside of both cages, so you couldn't see anything.
I mean, the only thing I can say about this is, you know, out of the two matches, which were, the first one was supposed to be Undertaker, was supposed to be Big Show versus Carly,
and it was Undertaker
versus Big Show. And then the second one, they got Great Carly in and had him against Batista. This was No Mercy 2007, which actually had the only good spot where, like, Batista does this insane leap between the two cages. And I was like, if you screw this up, you are so incredibly dead. There is no way you are surviving this. You are going to land on your head and it will kill you.
And he
stuck the landing. It is the only memorable moment of that entire debacle. And 10 years later, some moron in the WWE goes, you know what? We haven't done one of those in a while. There's a good reason. This is horrible. And we're going to have two not particularly interesting workers. One of them scarcely competent. Not getting any better. Please don't tell me he's getting any better. He's not, you know, there's no evidence to see this guy is going to be anything at all. In a gimmick match that has never worked yet. Why? Why would you do this?
You got me. I defended it when they first announced it because, hey.
Because you're a kind man.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are. You're a kind man.
Okay, at times.
You're a kind and sweet fella.
Not to any of the listeners of this, but...
He's delightful. You'd love him.
We're not talking about WWE. I'm grand.
Yes.
But it's... I don't know. I really wanted to give it the benefit of the doubt because Punjabi prison match, not something we've seen 5,000 times over the past few years. Some of their event matches becoming pay-per-views is a problem for me. Hell in a Cell shouldn't be on a timetable where we know it's coming up every time,
every
year.
Which is weird because one of the best things TNA ever did was, you know, lockdown worked, having an all-cage match pay-per-view, and then sensibly, you know, mostly, because you know, nothing was too sensible then, having no cage matches the rest of the year made it special. That was that worked. But the WWE guys just, it's Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, Chamber,
like, who cares?
Chamber, TLC, and Elimination. Right, Chamber, TLC, and Hell in a Cell, and Money in the Bank. I don't want them on scheduled timetables every year. When they occur, I want it to be out of the blue, and I want it to be special.
Money in the Bank I'm okay with, because I think Money in the Bank is now built into the schedule of the booking so much that one I'm okay. Particularly now that Royal Rumble is basically worthless because the booking is so predictable by that point. No one cares. And then, you know,
and they've spent the last few Royal Rumbles trying to
the coronation.
The coronation of,
and you know, King of the Ring is you know, pretty much is dead at this point. So I think it's a real shame. I miss King of the Ring.
I miss it too. WWE, they hate tournaments.
I don't know why.
Anything that resembles a real sport, they loathe.
Yeah. But I mean, nothing about Money in the Bank was immemorable. You know, and it's this, what's really worrying
what
me.
What was memorable was an incredibly dumb booking decision.
Oh, that which
they,
one?
They decided to use to get heat. And instead of using that heat to get the babyface over in the end, they had the heel go over again in the rematch.
Oh, God. Well, this is the thing. Is Randy Orton a babyface? How is Randy Orton a babyface? What is Randy
Orton
does?
They don't know how to book babyfaces.
They don't know how to book anybody. Because the thing is, like,
heels. Yeah, they know how to get heat. If you listen, so many podcasters have talked about this last few weeks. Lance Storm, Brian Alvarez on Wrestling Observer. It's like all this company knows how to do is make you hate the bad guys, but doesn't do a damn thing to make you cheer the good guys.
Well, I mean, like, if we want to sum up where this pay-per-view went wrong, this is the weird thing. I would have thought by now, like, they'd at least know how to do these things competently. And I don't expect good. I'm not expecting revolutionary.
Halfway decent.
Carmella winning the Women's Money in the Bank match and then winning the rematch. There's nobody on this planet looks at it and goes, you know what? This is going to have a good payoff. Nothing about this is a good idea.
I don't know if it's the writers or if it's just the writers catering to what Vince wants, and Vince only wants to build heat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, none of it makes any sense. I mean,
When's the last time Shine actually occurred?
Yeah. You look at the women's match, and it's like you've got some competent wrestlers. You've got Becky Lynch how they have made Becky Lynch not a megastar. They've done a worse job of destroying her than they have of Bayley, because if you want to see a case in point of how to make take a sellable babyface and kill everything everybody loves about them, look at what they did to Bayley. They have killed that character stone dead.
She was as over as Daniel Bryan.
I think at this point, I think it was deliberate. I think it had to have been. Yeah.
And the moment, it's like you can almost pinpoint the moment where, like, the needle went into the balloon of, you don't deserve the title. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But I'm keeping it anyway.
Who wrote that?
That should have been, if she was on the roster longer, I think she would have had the confidence to crumble that script up and trash it.
Yeah.
Because that's where it should have gone.
You know,
whoever fed her,
I know the money.
Whatever writer gave her that should be fired. If Vince approved it, he needs to step down and retire, because that proves he's out of touch and he can't write this for a damn, for anything.
Well, I mean, none of this made any sense. I mean, you've got, you look at the money, the two Money in the Bank matches. You have Carmella winning from a stupid, screwy finish that no one liked. Everybody was like, she's going to win again on Tuesday. Who fucking cares? Because as we said, there's so much TV to watch. And I'm sorry, whoever went, well, they'll tune in on Tuesday. They didn't.
No.
Like, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. WWE's numbers are down. There's going to come a point. Yeah,
They're to the point now where it's not like WCW. It's not going to happen the way it did, where all their mistakes came back to bite them. The problem with WWE, they have so many other revenue streams. It's not going to just end. It's going to be the slow, abysmal death.
It's going to be smaller houses at house shows.
Where they're tarping off majority of the arena.
Money in the Bank didn't sell out. Yeah, that's really problematic.
Yeah, pay-per-view's not selling out.
Yeah, you've got Baron Corbin coming in and winning the men's Money in the Bank.
It was so predictable
he was going to win that. Well, now what happens? What happens with Baron Corbin?
Is he any better on the mic with giving that to him?
He's getting a little better in the ring, but he's still... he's big.
He's tall.
Yeah, and speaking of... which is big cast syndrome. Oh my god. Like, you want to talk about... It's so weird. It's such a great storyline, and you know they've botched it already. That you have big cast who turns on Enzo. It turns out he's the one beating up Enzo. And it's clear they're going to strap a rocket to Big Cass, and right, God knows what they're going to do with Enzo. I'm like...
The problem is, they didn't. Here's something the audience likes. You like these two toys here? Let me take them away from you.
And they did it on a... Well, A, neither of them is
as great. Singles competitors, no. I don't buy either one. They both got a long way to go in the ring. Enzo's good on the mic as long as you keep his promos under 2 minutes. He just goes off on tangents.
Well, I think the problem is that he is such a good talker, and his use of rhythm and rhyme and the lyricism within his work, he gets the point done in 2 minutes, and they're saying, go out and there, do five, and he's like, dude, what else am I going to say? I've said what needs to be said, because you take the first 2 minutes of his promos, they're so good.
So
and even he knows, like, you are keeping me out here too long. This is a huge mistake. Cass is going to get pushed.
Even his entrance music is just generic as hell.
Here's the thing.
Hell.
I'm going to go on a limb here. And although I know that initially Cass is going to get the bigger push, Enzo, I think, has the bigger upside. I think Enzo, at the end of the day, has the possibility to be a really... he's never going to be the world's greatest wrestler, but
no.
I think he's going to get better. If you look at the arc that's there for him, you compare him to... Because his job, when he went out with Cass, was to get beaten up, which I think was part of why...
He was the road dog of this tag team.
Yeah, I think that's why Vince loved him so much. He's like, he can take heat. Yeah, you could take heat.
But ragdoll himself around the ring and injure himself.
But he threw himself into that. He now has the possibility of going, you know what? What happens if I get to put some offense in? I think that's going to be really interesting to see whether he has that in him.
I don't know if he has it. I think they were a tag team for too long. I think they should have had singles runs in NXT.
Yeah.
To force them both to get better in the ring, because I don't think either one of them is going to succeed outside of tag team.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing, possibility is send Enzo back down to NXT.
I'd be fine with
that. And put him in a position where it's like he came down because he doesn't have
to find himself
and come back. And I think if you sent him down and... God, can you imagine him in an angle with Bobby Roode and he's the guy who takes Bobby Roode down?
I would love it.
I think it'd be great. Because I think a face Enzo is a huge possibility.
Or
I don't see where Cass goes.
Or Itami in a triple threat.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they're going to have heel versus heel to have him take the strap from Brood. But in a triple threat, he wins. And then Enzo versus Itami.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of potential there. But, for them to come out and he does a good promo and then just gets beaten up by Cass. Who cares?
He never gets his comeuppance. Ever, ever, ever.
Well, but you look at
does anyone in this company?
No. you look at Strawberry Fields, and everybody, nobody got a real face victory. The closest you got was Sasha getting a count out win. Yeah.
And which... Alexa's still going to retain the belt. So,
that
Great Balls of Fire was emblematic of all the problems with WWE booking.
Such a weird.
You have every heel on the show go over.
Yeah,
every single one.
Well, I mean, it's a weird. I'm not even sure what they were thinking, because it's this seemed like an inessential pay-per-view anyway. Yep. Because they have the problem that Brock Lesnar is a part-timer. They can't get around this. Now, I think people accepted that first time round. I think Brock now is an old act. I think it's played out. I think people are still like, oh, he's here.
It's
like, dude, you weren't here for... What was the previous Raw pay-per-view? What was it before Money in the Bank? Talk amongst yourself, people. Was he at Extreme Rules?
No. Isn't this his first pay-per-view since his win?
Yeah.
At Mania?
Yeah.
Would make it...
Yeah, Extreme Rules you at least
three
had...
3 months.
Yeah, Extreme Rules you
had... 30-day rule.
30-day rule, my ass.
And they just released that book like a month after he won the belt.
What a joke. But it's old. You know,
yeah,
and he turns up, and he's at least this week he had the decent promo where he told Roman Reigns, you don't deserve shit.
Which the feud with Joe is the only reason I'm interested. Like, it's something fresh, new. We haven't seen it a million times already.
I mean, it was a good match.
I think he should have won with just one F5.
Oh no, but honestly, I don't think he should have won.
I would have been fine with Joe going over. And Joe holding the belt, possibly till Survivor Series, maybe. Yeah. And then you have either Brock come back and take it back from him. So you can build your match that Vince has had a hard-on for years of him versus Roman Reigns one-on-one.
Yeah.
Or you just have Strowman take the strap from him and do Strowman versus Lesnar versus Reigns.
By the way, when does Finn Balor get his rematch? When does he get his title shot for the belt he had to give up?
After never?
Yeah. What the hell? Okay, this was to go back to what I was saying about, like, it just felt like we'd seen everything before. It's because we have. I mean,
it's too much content. Because they're producing so much content, we're seeing matches, feuds, and stuff beat to death.
But it's not even that. It's like, they keep using the same people. You know, Bray Wyatt versus Seth Rollins. You know, just so they could finally give Bray... Somebody actually looked back, and his win-loss rate is like...
I think Tyler Breeze is the only person that on the active roster that has a worse win-loss record than him. Breeze's is like 8 matches out of 60-something.
Yeah, and his is like 160-something... losses and like 167 wins and like 300 and something losses. Bray Wyatt is like ridiculous. Yeah, we just you don't know how to book it. Yeah,
Undertaker never would have got over had he had that kind of a win loss record. Yeah.
Cesaro and Sheamus versus the Hardy Boys. Cesaro and Sheamus, which is like, it's a bright spot, but everybody's just waiting for
some babyface to actually get a win.
Well, they were waiting for that. Everybody's waiting for Broken Matt Hardy to come back. You've got the peril of an Iron Man match that everybody knows an Iron Man match comes down to the last 10 seconds. You can check out for, in this case, 29 minutes and 50 seconds. And they deliberately pissed everybody off by doing a Cesaro getting a pin in 19 seconds, rerunning the Daniel Bryan thing, which was why we hated Cesaro in the first place, and why it took them four years to rehabilitate him, which they only did by further delaying the inevitable rise of Cesaro. So, like, wasted opportunity. Match that you know you're not involved with, that everybody's waiting for, not a win but a gimmick change, which they keep teasing.
I think,
and it's going to come point where people go like, I don't even care
so
about
many
the
teasing. Times
yeah.
That's the problem with the feuds now. They don't know how to mix it up or keep it fresh.
Sasha Banks versus Alexa Bliss.
Competent
match. And it's in one of the better matches of the night because at least I cared about. Although it had that one thing where Alexa, you know, hyperextended her arm, which she can do, which everybody was, you know, unless
that should have been the finish,
wasn't. And it was kind of. Although I wonder whether they called an audible and said we're running short.
That match did come across pretty short.
Yeah, and I think I wonder whether they actually did go, oh, we need to get this. We need another 10 minutes of this. And it just didn't work. But, you know, that was such a weird thing to do because it looked like she'd actually, you know, basically completely ripped all the tendons in her arm. And I'm like,
I don't know how she does that.
But the thing is, it's like, yes, this is cool, but at the same time, you made half your audience want to lose their lunch because they thought it was legit because she does it so well. So it's like the rest of that match was like, I'm out. I'm really queasy about this. I'm like, just kind of grossed out. It's like, you can't do it again. She did it on great balls of fire.
It's like wasting your high spot on nothing paper.
And this is something that I would have saved until next time she was in the same ring as Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch slaps on the disarmer. She does that, thinks she's got her, and in fact goes, oh, I'm horrified, and, you know, Alexa, see, we're booking better than they are.
We've always booked better than they are.
But it's, it was...
In the mid-2000s, they just fell asleep at the wheel.
Yeah. The Miz versus Dean Ambrose for the 10 billionth time. Who cares?
Who cares?
Literally cares.
And it's... it's like a broken record. Him and Seth Rollins, they're inconsistent selling. Rollins, he didn't suffer from that on this pay-per-view. Ambrose, what? I don't get it. This, someone working a body part, and you ignore the body part that you're supposed to be selling to do a big move, and then all of a sudden you start selling it. Then you ignore it to do a big move, then you start selling it. That's so stupid.
Yeah, it's not even the Japanese style of you work through the pain, then you collapse. It really is like, was anything wrong? Oh no, I hurt. And it's like you had a second injury afterwards. There's just that difference. Go watch Naito. Watch how Naito sells. I'm sorry.
It's all three members of the Shield are guilty of it, but I think Ambrose is the worst.
It's amazing how why should he care at this point?
All three members are broken, and I think with Reigns, it's because they refuse to turn him heel, and it's like, it's the equivalent of keeping the white meat babyface Rocky Maivia and never having turned him heel.
Yeah.
And so the audience is rejecting and rejecting and rejecting. Rollins just does not have an established character, like Seth friggin' Rollins, okay. Kingslayer, okay, what are you? What are you? Architect, no, what are you?
Yeah.
I'm not feeling it.
Yeah.
Ambrose is
the worst wasted opportunity of the lot. And you know, it's so annoying because we've had flashes of old John Moxley in the latest version of this feud. Let him be that guy.
He's just struggling because they're trying to put him in a box.
Well, they've so boxed him in. And, you know, how long has this feud been going on now? This is final proof they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, like, not both of them coming to Raw was a mistake. It should have just been Miz or just
even
Ambrose.
Even then, I mean, and I'm looking at it, I'm just like, this so why? You know, Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman, which was, you know,
it turned the tide of the pay-per-view as far as like, okay, something halfway interesting.
Yeah, but it did a thing that a lot of people go like, well, at least it's a harkening back to when they used to do like, oh, stuff crashing into other stuff. I never liked those.
Speaking of crashing into
never
stuff,
liked them.
I'm starting to see the pattern of the Braun Strowman match. And I gave all the props in the world because Vince knows how to get over big monsters. It's the one thing he actually is still competent at. Roman Reigns dodging and Braun running into something. How many times do we have to see that this year?
Well,
how many times in one show?
That was the neat thing about this is that the way that Braun won was he did that to Roman, which was actually some nice booking. I was like, the ending, I'm like, yeah, Roman's a putz.
It was nice
but
booking
up until
the door flew open after Strowman won the match.
Yeah.
Roman came out, and this is your top babyface of your company, the top good guy
who just lost legitimately
due to his own stupidity.
Yeah,
no cheating, his own.
And then,
oh god,
then attempts to murder Braun Strowman with no consequences.
I would like someone to count up the number of felonies that
somebody did. Somebody actually did, and they didn't just count the number of felonies. They actually went through Texas law in particular.
It was in Dallas, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was hilarious because they actually said it was like
probably a dozen. Probably a dozen
wasting of. It was like,
destroying an ambulance.
Destroying an ambulance is a specific one, but the fact that he stole a vehicle is one, but then stealing
a vehicle and crashing it into something is like double.
And then stealing it, and then assaulting an EMT because he dragged the EMT out. And that's an additional felony on top of the regular one of basically Grand Theft Auto with men. I was like the whole thing, and this is your baby face, and then. This is where this sucked. Because...
Which part?
They then send...
Oh, and not to mention the billion cameras that are backstage to make it feel even more... Oh, guys, back in the Attitude Era, which people keep trying to hearken this to, there weren't a billion cameras backstage. When his Corvette got cement dumped in it, there was one camera back there.
This felt more like TNA... when TNA would do backstage stuff, and there'd be like 30 cameras.
It feels extra fake when there's that many cameras back there.
Including there was clearly one camera that must have been destroyed by one camera who was squished by.
Oh, that was Kurt Wagner, otherwise known as Nightcrawler.
Oh.
He and the camera teleported out of the way.
And then we have the weirdest thing you can ever imagine doing. You've got this big gimmick match that's going on, and they're in the middle of it, and it's like, well, okay, we've got this match, and then suddenly they go. Well, let's put Heath Slater and Kurt Hawkins on.
Yes, what was that? What was that?
Which then they didn't show, and suddenly all you hear is, Heath Slater has won!
We didn't see the finish!
And it was
when's the last time a match occurred while something else was going on and we didn't see the finish? When Russo was writing!
This is the weird thing about it. I was watching it, and I was like, okay, I'm trying to work out on TV what's happening. I have no idea how this is playing in the room. Because this is just...
Dead. The crowd was
dead. Braun Strowman comes out and, crawls back to his nest, bleeding from his ears or whatever. The only reason Braun is over is...
Because of his size.
Well, it's not that. Braun is not over because of his size. Braun is over... Because enough people want to see somebody beat the tar out of Roman Reigns.
I'm sorry. I thought you meant why he's getting pushed. Yeah. You said over.
Yeah.
Completely apologize. He's getting pushed because of his size.
Do you think he is going to be over in any other angle?
No.
Nope.
Crowd's going to be dead for all of his... He's going to get, Kane Big Show level heat when... As soon as this feud is done.
Yeah. And then, the main event was at least interesting because they built it up right. And this was the thing. This is where they painted themselves into a corner by Vince's fearless dedication to having a WrestleMania
Reigns
versus Bork Bork. Oh. And I'm watching this and it's like,
it wasn't a bad match.
It wasn't a bad match. But here's the thing. If you wanted somebody who the audience is going to be into, and the contemporary audience, which is watching MMA, and is looking for something different, and is looking for a new name, if you'd have had Brock in a legitimate match, drop the belt to Samoa Joe. Now, the thing is, they built Bork Bork up as too much of an impossible monster. He's overbooked now. He just is an absurdity.
I would have liked Joe to have gone over, but I would have been fine with ending the match due to double DQ, something of that. I know it's the main event, and we typically don't want to end pay-per-views that way. In this case, I would have been fine with it. Or blood losses from both competitors, some way, shape, or form, for us to get us to a rematch.
I wonder whether they said you can't. Whether they actually backed away from that because, we'd had three people busted open in the match. There was in the night. There was a lot of blood. And Joe, Joe bleeds like a fountain anyway. But he just adds to him being a tough guy. You've got a legitimate tough guy. You look at him and go, He's clearly got Brock's number. wouldn't it make sense, if you want to have even a little bit of interest going to WrestleMania, that he kills Bork with the Kikina Clutch? Because that he knows he works. And then Bork is out for a while for someone, you know, just say he Bork's out because, like, finally, there's a guy who likes to play as rough as he does. Brilliant. Good show. Move along.
You now then, have the man who slayed the beast.
And the thing is, we now know that other people can take Joe because Joe is very good at certain kinds of matches. And he had this. And this was clearly a hearkening back to, I mean, that he got this match and that it was booked in the way it was. I'm saying right now, this Kurt Angle's work.
Because I agree. This felt like the TNA feud between him and Angle that did the highest pay-per-view buy rate in TNA history.
Because it was phenomenal. It's a great match.
And wasn't that all...
And it was just like... it wasn't like... There was
Dutch Mantel's...
Yeah. And there was nothing other than here's two legitimate tough guys. The nastiest guys the company has got.
They didn't do fake vignettes or whatnot. They just did normal interviews about their life. Their training, it treated it like an MMA fight.
And it was a great match. And this had that feeling of just like, it also shows Bork, you know, I don't care what anybody says, Bork cannot do long matches anymore. There's nothing to suggest that guy has any conditioning. Like, hate to say purple-headed monster, but, you know, he really is. Like, there's a reason, like, you know, Joe puts on the clutch, and Bork is bright red, heading to purple. And I'm like, are you okay? And I think his condition is not what he was. He's still strong as an ox. He's still capable of pulling off incredible stuff in the ring. But is he really capable? Can he go 10 minutes? He could barely go 10 minutes. Could he go half an hour?
I was doubting that in this match last year against Ambrose at Mania.
Yeah.
That match was full of so many smoke and mirrors, and it felt like either Brock was one of two things, tired or disinterested.
I think he's both. I think he's disinterested, but also, yeah, he's not as young as he was.
Carrying that much muscle.
I mean, honestly, like, Bork, dump some muscle. You don't need it. You are, you know, it's not doing you any favors. And at some point, it's all going to start sagging, and it's going to cause you structural issues.
I think he's of the mind that I only appear a few times a year. It's okay to do this for another 2-3 years, and then I can shed the weight.
And here's the thing that it all comes down to here. That Joe, you could have been in a situation where he's champ, you can then have some really interesting matches until the point where Bork comes back and just goes, I want my belt back. And then beats the piss out of Joe. But you've already proven Joe is a legitimate main event guy. Now they've had to do this stupid thing that they did on Monday, like they're building up to a three-way, and then it's probably going to be a four-way at SummerSlam. And, you know, Joe's going to not be the biggest guy there, but that's a possibility of, like, you know, that's when you maybe have an upset win. I would like to think that they are heading to that kind of smartness of booking. I know they're not, because they're not that smart.
Or they just to protect Brock, they're going to have Joe choke out one of the other guys and then win the belt. And that way, I think he has to at least keep it to Survivor Series if they dump the belt right back to Brock or
Roman. Or have that be the moment where Finn Balor comes back and goes, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. It's my belt. I never lost that. I gave it up.
Because,
have him go after Joe.
Okay, yeah.
Have him rematch. Oh, my God.
NXT.
Because the thing is, like, I still don't think we saw their best matches in NXT. I still think that you could... And that's the other thing. I mean, like, where was Finn Balor? Where was he? Like, this is the thing that bugs me about this. Like, other than Joe interjecting into this scene, there was nothing new about this night. Yeah,
Melo didn't even have a match at the pay-per-view.
No, he had nothing. Nothing.
Feuding with the freaking Drifter.
Great, that's going to go far.
No,
there's a couple of people I know who are like, I like the Drifter because he annoys people. You are fools to yourselves. But, you got to compare this.
It's easy heat for WWE marks.
Yeah. But you compare this to, you know, New Japan. And what's happening in New Japan at the moment? New Japan is just bursting at the seams.
Because Gato's smarter than pretty much everyone on WWE Creative.
We had Dominion with Omega Okada 2. Phenomenal match.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, arguably better than the first one, with great booking. Like, this is the thing, they told multiple stories. They're clearly building to the point where Omega is going to take the belt, because the first time, Okada beat him. Second time, 60-minute Iron Man match. No, 60-minute time limit match. Yeah. And it goes to a time draw. You know, he couldn't beat Okada, but Okada couldn't beat him. They are too well scouted. So clearly they're building to the point.
It's long-term booking done at its finest.
Yeah.
And I really wish that some other companies would get on the ball and look at what New Japan is doing. They just not only know how to build towards events better, they know how to build a specific big show better. They don't have the start with a bang mentality, then lull the audience into false sense of security with the mid card, then amazing match and a buffer match, and no, it's all rise from the start. That's why a lot of those matches start off with the 8-man, 10-man tags, you know, which fans may not be super invested in emotionally, but there's so many spots in it that it at least keeps their attention.
Well, I mean, you're in a position where, sorry for the noise there, folks, I was just feeding my cat. The glamorous life of a wrestling podcaster. That you know, they do it right. They start off like an actual sporting event does, of the lower card stuff. There's a reason why it's called the lower card. The WWE's idea of a curtain twitcher is just a baffling one to me. It doesn't make any sense in the slightest.
Someone who was just a champ, yeah, like 3 or 4 months ago.
Because there's always going to be people who aren't going to want to turn up early. The diehards, I mean, I've been to UFC events. It's your day.
The full show, yeah.
A few years ago, for example, they had a UFC fight night in Austin, and you know the actual fight night show was 8 till 9 central. They started at 3, and you know some of the lower card stuff. It was solid little matches, nothing extraordinary. But you know, you're just watching it and just going like, okay, these guys can be really good. And then actually the fight of the night was like the third match on the pre-show. It was phenomenal. And you're going like, oh, well, if I turn up early, I may get to see something really, really good. You know, but if you want to turn up and just catch like the end of Dominion, you know, you turn up 2 hours before the end, you're still going to get a good show. You don't have to be there for the full, 4 and a bit hours or something? You know, something Dominion's like long that. Show. It's not a short show. But you know, they built that up perfectly. And then, what do they do when they have the G1 tournament in the
US?
States. What is the thing they didn't do? They didn't do Omega Okada 3.
It's too soon.
They didn't run to it.
They so wisely kept keeping that in their back pocket.
And instead, what they did was that they had you know, I mean, I was a little surprised that the final for the US belt was Omega Ishii.
Ishii, yeah.
I thought it was going to... Honestly, when they first announced, I'm like, well, it's going to be Omega Naito. That was my gut. I thought, like, that's the smart one to go with.
Yeah.
But instead, they went, okay, let's have somebody who's stylistically so different.
Exactly.
And it gives them... And it's... What is it? What's the one thing it is? Fresh.
Fresh.
It was fresh. It was like, oh,
and if you think Samoa Joe is a wrecking machine, Ishii just takes it to a whole new level.
I know a lot of people have talked about it, but one of the best spots of the last couple of years where Omega is trying to set him up for the Dragon Suplex and he gets his arms up behind him and Ishii just bites down the stone pitbull whose bite is so mighty that he can clamp on to the rope.
To the rope.
Holy, and it was like, that's beautiful. That is understanding the character. That's understanding how these two guys can work together and pull off something really special. And then, you know, I think it was kind of inevitable they were going to put the US belt on Omega. I think that was kind of a given. Unless they were going to pull some weird
Omega's thing out of going to be the face of that company here in the States.
And, you know, I think they're being very smart about their expansion. And it's, yeah, it's just made, it makes so much sense. And then we have like a vaguely face-ish promo from him at the end.
They're also building towards the inevitable like end of the whole Omega and Cody on the same page deal.
Well, they've been they've been teasing that for a while. I mean, I wonder whether they're actually, because you know, Ring of Honor, the very bold step of making Cody champion, and I'm okay with that. I think some people have been like, I'm not sure. It's like, look, somebody was going to put a belt on Cody at some point. Somebody needed to go, we need to pull the trigger on this guy before the WWE realizes how much they fucked up. He goes, I've done my run, and goes back, takes a huge paycheck and becomes the freshest thing on the roster. Because, God, at this point, would you not pretty much kill to see Cody versus AJ? You know, just with how much better AJ's got. AJ's match against Okada, which I don't think anybody expected was going to be as good as it was. You know, I think, and the fact that they fought basically a 50-50 match of half WWE American style and half New Japan style, and they both worked that well.
They both worked that well. Okada is capable of adapting to anyone's style.
I don't want Okada to go to WWE. Not because I don't want Okada to become a megastar who makes huge amounts of money. I think the WWE, they fucked up.
Yeah. Nakamura's.
They fucked up Nakamura.
Ridiculously.
Yeah, they basically fucked up everybody at the moment. I mean, it's like, and I was like, if you could screw up Nakamura, which is such a no-brainer, and a no-brainer that you've handled
don't
before.
Don't put Mike's microphones in front of him and force him to cut 10, 15 minute promos.
Nobody does. And don't cut his entrance. Don't do any of that shit. Just appreciate who the guy is. So now we like, yeah, but I want Okada to stay and be the biggest guy in Japan and help, you know, because he's what,
28?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
28, 29.
Like, I mean, yeah, he's going to have to start changing his approach a little bit, much like Will Ospreay. But like those guys, I'm like, is there an upside for them to come to the U.S.?
I don't think Okada will. No. If anyone that remembers his little stint in TNA, they're probably of a mindset he should never come back to the States.
Yeah.
Given how badly they mishandle him.
Well, yeah, but TNA mishandled everybody. But yeah, I think that's a really, really amazing situation to be in, where, and I think it's really fascinating. We've seen it. I think the success of New Japan at handling people really, really well. Marty Scurll, now a megastar. But Marty Scurll, like, you know, that term was on Ring of Honor. It was not. So they're kind of building up. I wonder how, you know, if the long term plan is to, you know, because New Japan does not need everybody they've got, honestly. And they've got a lot of young boys coming up. Who are just getting better. You know, I wonder whether we're going to see a Bullet Club split.
I think we do need one. And one of the questions that was brought up by one of our wonderful listeners, we're going to segue to that in a few.
Yeah. But we got to talk about, of course, TNA. Now Global Force Wrestling.
GFW. Jeff Jarrett runs the best pyramid scheme. Money.
Well, the thing is that Jeff Jarrett now has, like, because the whole thing about a Ponzi scheme is that they have to collapse at some point, because otherwise the only people who are left to sell to, by the nature of a Ponzi scheme, are people who already sold it to you. Like, it is a snake that eats itself. So we are actually at that point with TNA. Where they found the only person they could find who was enough of a mark to buy TNA was the guy who sold TNA years ago. Good work, Jeff. I mean, I will say, however,
should we give him a round of applause?
Yeah, keep just good work, sir. I will say that if you look at it, it was probably really smart, because it was almost undoubtedly worth more than when he sold it. So he's got the assets back for a song. I mean, if nothing else, the tape library is invaluable. But you gotta love a company
that somebody asked me my opinion of TNA the other day, and I just posted the gif of Sideshow Bob eternally walking into rakes, and then just because of course, you know, the day after, like, I mean, God, they go, oh, you know what, we're going to unify the belts. Bobby Lashley, who's rumored to be retiring, that rumor's been doing the rounds.
I've not heard anything from reputable sources yet, though.
I thought Meltzer had said, like, he'd heard something. I could be wrong on that, but they put the belt on Alberto El Patron, which is a risky proposition at the best of times. I mean, I know it's like, yeah, we got somebody.
Guy's
like,
a good athlete. Just his best work was in AAA Lucha Underground. WWE, he got stale fast.
Yeah.
Both runs. The second run, I don't blame him as much. Coming back as with the weird Zeb Coulter angle just didn't quite work.
Didn't work.
But the first run, he got stale so quickly.
Yeah.
And
well, that's because people turned up. That's what they are forgetting with the Maharaja. That people will go, yay, it's a big intro, and the entrance is huge, and then they'll get bored really fast. And I think the same thing's going to happen there. That, you know, but the very next day, he gets busted at the airport for an incident.
Domestic, alleged domestic.
Yeah,
incident.
I'm like, where's the upside to this? I don't know what, you know, Jeff Jarrett, so many good intentions for the industry, and yet done himself absolutely no favors over the years. And
because a lot of, due to his associations, a lot of times, hell, they lost the Spike deal because
Dixie wanted Russo back. Stupid ideas of our time.
I don't think he should have been brought in the first place.
Oh, no, he shouldn't. Have. The guy is clearly, you know, he has name recognition, but so Jack the Ripper. This is just, you know,
how apropos.
Yeah, this.
Wow.
I mean, it's weird because I so want there to be another promotion, a big
size. They were the closest.
They could
as far as been. US promotions. They were the closest.
Because let's remember the important thing. If you've got the WWE Network, go back and look at. You don't even need to go back a very long time. Just go a little bit before the Attitude Era really kicks in. Not even before that, just before it really kicks in. And watch some of the Raws from back then, or watch like some of the In Your Houses. They were not a big company. They weren't guaranteed 10,000 people for a TV show. You know, they sure as hell weren't guaranteed, you know, 8,000 for a house show. You know, they were playing, you know, Hammerstein Ballroom or places of a similar size. And there'd be empty seats. You know, people aren't locked in for life. That's an issue they face. And I think they've really, you know, they can slip.
They're not worried about the ratings because there's no legit competition and they have other revenue sources. Those other revenue sources aren't going to mean jack if another promotion comes up and starts doing 2.5s, 2.8s, 3.0s.
Well, at the moment, if another promotion comes up and does, you know, 1.5, they should be terrified because, you know, Raw is, you know, pulling in the low twos because nobody cares. You know, it's
dying a slow death.
Yeah, and you look at it and you go, well, here's the reason why Brock Lesnar is bad for the company. Yeah, people are going to tune in to watch him when he turns up, but it means they're not tuning in when he's not there.
Exactly.
And you've educated them. The rest of these people don't matter because if they mattered, the champ would turn up and dispose of them. You know, because that's the whole thing. It's like you kill people on Raw so that you don't have to deal with them at the pay-per-view. Brock doesn't even bother with that. None of these, you've made, just by his absence, you made everybody look like a chump. Good work, kids.
Everyone is lesser nice. Because of that.
It just astounds me. But you know what? You know what does not astound me and always fills me with joy?
What?
The letterbox.
Yay!
Yay!
Hey, it's time for listener letters, which is always great fun because we get some good ones. I'll start off actually with one from our good friend Al. Hi, Al. Cod, fish, batter, balls. It's an in-joke and therefore wonderful. Who asked, who is more likely to ever display a giving a fuck face? Brock or Randy? Wow.
Brock. I'm going to answer it. Brock. Randy, his face is constantly stuck in...
I have a job. I have angles. I don't care what happens. Like, Brock at least occasionally, like with Samoa Joe.
Brock emotes. He emotes occasionally.
Well, I mean, this is the big difference, that we have two people who are two champs who have two opponents that are clearly hand-selected. And one of them gets put over as looking good. Doesn't win, but gets put over as looking good. And that's Joe. Joe came out of that match looking like a legitimate badass.
Yeah.
While, on the other hand, you have Randy versus the Maharaja. And
the Maharaja's your champion.
The Maharaja goes over and still looks like a chump. Still looks bad. And it's because I think Brock comes out and goes, you know what, I can make this guy look good. I think Randy thinks, oh, if I just cover for this guy, he's going to look good. It ain't going to happen. And you're not good enough to cover for him. You are not capable of carrying that guy.
Nope.
And I just find it mysterious that so many people have this weird belief that he's good. He's even worse than The Miz when it comes to, you know, inexplicable long-term successes from OVW. Because at least The Miz can talk. I mean, it's, you know, nails down a chalkboard.
He has that John Cena, like, I'll get up at 3 a.m, go fly to do press conference, blah, blah, blah. That's what he's good for.
Randy gets a few screams and shifts a few shirts.
Yeah.
And is dull and the Hangman's DDT looks stupid. The RK out of nowhere, everybody should have that scouted by now. Like, what is the purpose of this guy?
TDP did it better.
It is undoubtable. Al, our short and sweet answer is Bork Bork, the purple-headed monster.
All right. I got one from Justin Teague.
Hey, Justin.
Hey, due to the dwindling main event scene of Ring of Honor and the heavy reliance on the interpromotional guys, if they inevitably get that deal to get a primetime slot on WGN once everything is finalized, are they going to have any legit stars to be able to lean on?
Yeah. I mean, one, I think that they've got a bunch of people that even if they're co-working with New Japan has enough people. I mean, the Bullet Club can withdraw from New Japan for a year, not work a single show.
They have Los Ingobernables. They have so many other
groups. They have Chaos. They have Suzuki Gun, who, you know, great run at the beginning of the year. And I think bring them back for even more work. You know, they don't, you know, so they can go, look, the guy's under co-contracts. You know, we've got a 2-hour week show that we need to fill with stuff, and we need main eventers.
I think Cody withdraws from New Japan. Let him be your big star heel.
Cody is your top guy.
I honestly sign Austin Aries immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately.
Oh, yeah. Which I think is a sign. I think there's something really interesting going on that I think Austin Aries points to, that there are enough people now who are going, you know what? I couldn't go to WWE. I don't need to.
The Young Bucks prove that. Their merch sales?
The Bullet Club deal with Hot Topic?
Yes.
Proves, beyond a shadow of a doubt, you do not need to go. Austin Aries, the greatest man who ever lived. Could just come back to Ring of Honor tomorrow and you could just put the TV championship straight on him.
Agreed.
War
Machine is going to be big, big stars.
Yeah.
Soon enough, you still have the Briscoes, who I think the Briscoes have some serious mainstream appeal.
Oh,
if you give them, I don't think ROH gives them enough time on the mic.
No, they don't. I think they're great on the mic. You know, you've got the Young Bucks,
Chicken Coop segments.
Marty Scurll.
Oh, Marty Scurll. Yeah,
Marty Scurll.
I say make him TV champ.
Yeah,
Just
give it a year and
let him and Aries go back and forth.
Give it a year, see what you can do to get Will Ospreay. Because I don't think, you know, how much would it drive the WWE mad if you got Will Ospreay? Get Zack Sabre Jr. The WWE's massive screw up that they've got all these British performers under some kind of contract and never actually putting them
never
on TV.
Using them.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, why exactly is the WWE British Championship not on a pay per view, but it is being defended at ICW?
They don't like Pete Dunne showing up on ROH TV or New Japan.
How long is that contract?
I agree.
Yeah, because if I was Ring of Honor, I'd be like, Pete, I know it's fun doing that. It ain't a it's not a lifetime commitment. If they got enough talent to get a TV deal, and getting a TV deal will get them even more talent.
If I competed in that UK tournament and I see what 205 Live did by pissing away all the goodwill from the Cruiserweight tournament,
yeah.
The moment my contract is up, I'm out of there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, like Tozawa. Tozawa's got to be sat there going, like, what did I do with my career? This was a mistake. And I think there's a lot of people who, you know, if they just take the buyout, sit at home for 90 days, and then turn up on Ring of Honor, like that.
I knew this was going to happen. So 205 Live, I knew it. I called it from day one. And the moment they decided, okay, we're going to do a weekly show. That means Vince and Kevin Dunn are going to have a hand in this, which means it's going to be crap.
And there's so many people out there that we haven't even talked about the Women of Honor roster, which is great and getting better.
Did someone get injured, though?
Like, somebody did, but I can't remember who it was. But, you know, it's bound to happen to you. It's wrestling. It's not bad.
Yeah, I just...
Taylor Hendricks has never looked better. And, like, you dedicate half an hour every week to Women of Honor. Take them seriously. Put them out there as killers. Taylor, like, I said at the beginning of the year when we did the 2016 wrap up, like, yeah. Taylor Hendricks is one of the women wrestlers to watch, and her matches are getting better and better.
Extend the weekly show to a 90-minute format.
Yeah.
And just intermix in with the women and men. There's your show.
There's your show.
WGN.
You know, you've got, you know, and all the people on the indies who aren't even, you know, who aren't even doing anything, particularly signed with anybody else. Get Leo Rush back. If you got the money, get Leo Rush back in 5 seconds flat. Get ACH back. King of Texas.
Phenomenal. Jay Lethal can still... Him as a main eventer is still money to me.
Terrell Tempo. Terrell has nothing but upside. I watched he's just had two amazing matches in Inspire Pro Wrestling. Yes, I ring announce for Inspire Pro. You really should turn up. We've got a great card coming up in September. If you're in Austin on September 2nd, please come through. It's going to be awesome. You've got all those guys. Those two guys in their 30-minute Iron Man match, phenomenal. You know, him and ACH just rip the place up every time. Those two guys, money. Every single time.
Else Cedric Alexander were to go back.
Flip Gordon, who is like watching AJ Styles in 2004, 2005. That guy is just getting better and better every week. There are so many people out there. And, you know, the man who I think, yeah, God, if you came to me and said, you know, Ring of Honor has a two hour slot now, here's some cash. Go, you know, go sign some people.
Oh, you mean the very frugal owners of Ring of Honor who won't put the necessary money to make it?
But yeah, if somebody came to me and said, here's not a blank check, but enough to get a few talents, I would get Sami Callihan, who is a ring general and was completely wasted as Solomon Crowe. It is, having seen that guy up close, it is unreal to think how badly wasted he was in WWE, and Keith Lee. And I would put a rocket on Keith Lee, and I would hang the promotion off him, and the goddamn that man is strong enough to carry a promotion by himself. He is insane.
I agree. If they were willing to get him to sit down at the table, can you imagine if CM Punk showed up back there?
Oh my God.
That would blow the roof. That is your...
He would...
That first episode, you could put that against Raw.
He would
unlike,
do that.
Unlike Monday Night Impact, this will actually move the needle.
He would actually... I think he might even do that just to piss Vince.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't think are willing to put up that kind of money yet.
No, but if WGN were,
yeah,
if Ring of Honor went somewhere else,
if WGN is like, okay, you can get, here's 2011, 2012 videos WWE, and look at the ratings, look at the merch sales. This guy outsold John Cena merchandise wise during several months of that period.
Yes. And honestly, there's got to be a few guys, you know, I could, if they did that, I think Roderick Strong might be well advised to say, you know what, I've had my NXT run, I'm going to go back to Ring of Honor. And the doors would blow off the place if you put Roddy on TV, because the man is walking charisma. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, what's his contract? Probably 2 years? And he's a year into that already.
Possibly.
So, yeah, I think it is very, very easy for Ring of Honor, because they've got a good booking team. They've got their heads on straight. I think they've got the talent pool out there. And let's be honest, it's cooler to work for Ring of Honor at the moment than it is for WWE. And a lot of guys, if you're planning to be in the business in 10 years' time, if you're looking at WWE and going like, how does this benefit me? Like, where is my career going to be? Like, you know, Simon Gotch has been sat on his hands for 90 days. His 90 days is up. In fact, I think his 90 days is up next week.
Next week.
So I think we're going to see him appear somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, Sammy Guevara as well, who, exactly, if you didn't see him, was at Slammiversary. And Sammy is a human spotlight machine. He is just, he's insanely good and only getting better.
Next question is from at BigEvil895. I believe I've asked this before, but will we ever see a Joe Muscle Buster on the main roster, or is he just regulated to being submission guy? I didn't think the move was banned. I thought it was just a conscious choice on his part.
I think so. I mean,
I've not heard anything about the move actually being banned.
I mean, he has evolved the Muscle Buster. It's not the same, you know, because it used to be much more of a
devastating
sit down. Like, he just sat down and just killed the guy. Whereas this is more kind of like a really
hard suplex.
Yeah, it's like a really, really snug vertical suplex now, which is, it's a very different move to what it used to be.
Yeah.
Go back and watch some of his early TNA matches, and it's like, it's the same name as a different move. So I'm sure that he could find a way to change it up and still keep it feeling like it used to.
Okay.
Hey, I just want to see Joe do a spinneroonie.
Agree. At
like a Weeble. He's going to kill me now, isn't he?
Possibly.
Oh, God.
At Sarah H72, why do you guys submit yourself to such agony by watching Vince McMahon's product?
I think it's unavoidable. You just have to...
It's the top show in the land.
Yeah, you just have to...
You can't say you cover pro wrestling and not cover that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a necessity. We don't want to, we have to. And last one, at PatKing13. I mean, with the huge rise in popularity of New Japan Pro Wrestling, do you guys think it could end up being a legitimate rival to WWE? We're seeing Bullet Club t-shirts all around the U.S., Canada, etc. The popularity has got to be off the charts right now.
Sorry, say again?
Basically, do we think that New Japan will ever be a legit rival to WWE?
I don't know, and I don't know whether they actually really want to be.
I think it's comparing apples to oranges. What the WWE audience wants and what New Japan wrestling fans want, it's like night and day. I don't think... It would require a product that's so similar to WWE. Like a TNA... That's a similar product. That could be what is perceived as a competitor. Even though technically New Japan is the number two promotion in the world right now, I don't think they want to be.
I think they want to send a shot across WWE's bows.
Stop stealing our talent.
Stop stealing our guys. And, you know, people have said, you know, Okada was backstage at Raw and SmackDown. Oh, yeah, does this mean he's going to go to WWE?
Doubt it.
One, he's halfway through the year. So he, you know, because their contracts run until
December to December.
No, because it's Wrestle Kingdom is in January, isn't it? Because
I thought they signed right before.
I think no, like because they signed
right after.
Their contracts expire
after Wrestle Kingdom.
After Wrestle Kingdom,
okay.
Which is why everybody moves around. Which is why Suzuki Gun came back from Noah.
I don't think they're bothered. I mean, like, you know,
they're content with.
Yeah, I mean, they're the biggest.
They've come so far since the late '90s, early 2000s, when they were their business. What, compare that to WWE early '90s.
They're the biggest promotion in Japan.
Yeah,
that's nothing to sneeze at.
And every year, their Tokyo Dome sellouts.
Yeah.
Second to none outside of WWE stadium shows.
So what? You know, why? You know, you're the biggest in a different market. Why panic?
Exactly.
I think they're
do what you do best.
I think they'd be more worried about, you know, Dragon's Gate or Noah. You know, and they're bigger than either of them. So I think they're probably bigger than both of them combined. So they got nothing to worry about. I think they're fine.
Or Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, like, begging people to come to do. Hey, you want to do the type of match you want
to
do?
Come to Bola, where, you know, 800 people for
And where is it? Reseda, California?
Two nights of the best wrestling on the planet. Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much as always for downloading us. Thank you so much as always for being here, Gene. Feel free to listen in anytime. But you can subscribe to oneofus.net. It's only $2 a pop. It's, you know, and it does help keep the lights on. So, you know, as always, thank you so much for listening to Thumbtacks and Screwjobs.
Plugs.
Follow me on Twitter at YorkshireTX and read me every week in the Austin Chronicle, austinchronicle.com.
And catch my stuff at Smart Country at oneofus.net. Also, catch me at the Scrum Sports and follow me on Twitter at Gene Selassie.
Yay! And as always, thank you so much for tuning in. Ding, ding.
Good night.